All right, all right, all right. Here we are. Welcome to another episode of Let There Be Talk. Dale Razor's in the house. It is February 17th. It is a Monday, and that means it's a new episode. And this is episode number 517. Yes, 517. And I can't even believe who I'm about to... introduce to you guys here on the show today. He is a Rock and Roll Hall of Famer. He is a damn legend. I call him the glue that keeps Aerosmith together. Mr. Brad Whitford is here today. And man, was this an honor to talk to this guy. The first time I remember getting into Aerosmith was late 70s. There was a record store in my town called Backdoor Records, and this old hippie named Rick owned it. I would hang out down there nonstop. You know, that's one of those places that sold bongs. The Protopipe. Remember the Protopipe, the brass one? It had the little flap you just slide over, put the weed in there, smoke up. And then you could stash weed in the little tube, and it had a poker all in one. Whoever invented that, give him the Nobel Peace Prize. The Protopipe. Anyway, so I used to hang out at this record store, and they had what I would call the original iTunes. They were the first iTunes, meaning they had this system where you'd give them like $10 for the year, and you could check out a record a week. Like a library, a rock and roll library. And it was crazy. I don't even know if that was legal back then. Just check out a record, go home, play it for a week, and then come back. And the first record I checked out was a masterpiece called Toys in the Attic. I was in love with the song Walk This Way and Sweet Emotion. And so, of course, I grabbed the record, got home, and just played those songs over and over and over until I got burnt on them, and then dug into the deep tracks, including Toys in the Attic, that fucking song, No More, No More. And right away, I was like, this is a band for me. I don't even think any of my friends were listening to them. I was just kind of like, God, it just felt like my kind of little tree fort secret. It was almost like older people's rock, like just a couple years older. I was in sixth grade summer. But from then on, I was just addicted to Aerosmith. Get Your Wings, of course, the masterpiece, Rocks, and my favorite, the live record. Oh my God. God, live bootleg. I always love the Mother Popcorn. Hot damn! Anyway, what about SOS? I'm just looking at some of the songs. Sight for Sore Eyes, Chip Away at the Stone. These guys, man. Last Child, which my guest Brad wrote, and it's just such a smoking funky track. Lord of Your Thighs. These guys just have massive, massive song catalog. Anyway, I gotta thank Greg Howard, his tech, for hooking this up. Greg and everybody in the Aerosmith camp. I can't even tell you. I went to Vegas last week for the residency and got a full backstage tour. Checked out all the guitars, the amps. I was walking around on the stage. It was nuts. They've got this museum under the stage for VIPers with all these old amps and guitars and photos. Oh man, they had my favorite Joe Perry photo, that one where they're like playing, I believe it's like St. Louis or something, somewhere. And he's got like the guitar, you just see his back, and then he's got the BC Rich over his back, but then he's like playing a Strat. Anyway, oh man, I've been way, way deep all week in Aerosmith. They never went away for me ever, but in the last week, I've just been burning it up, man. Before we get into Brad, I want to tell you guys a fantastic sponsor. A lot of you are probably guitar players tuning into this today. Maybe you've got some achy joints, achy knees. My whole body aches, man. I just got off a plane from Florida. And, CBD is my my savior. And CBD Lion is some of the best CBD on the planet. Super clean, third-party tested. These guys are the best. Handmade bath bombs. They got the tinctures right under your tongue. Drop, drop, you're ready to go. Gummies. They've even got pet tinctures. Your pet going crazy. You got that nutty dog just barking all the time and shit. Give them some CBD. CBD Lion, the cleanest, the best, and they are an incredible sponsor. CBDLion.com and use the code DEAN, CBDLION.com. Use the code DEAN. Get crazy discounts. I'm using the topical lotions right now for my fucked up neck. And, you know, if you got joint aches, grab some of this. Maybe you got some anxiety. Whatever you got, CBD is going to help you, and CBD Lion is the best. Use the code DEAN, CBDLion.com, DEAN. All right. Just got back from Florida. Like I said, it was amazing. I was out on the road, still on this Marc Maron tour. I cannot tell you how great it's been. Marc is just fucking amazing, watching him every night, just watching a masterclass in comedy. I'm learning so much stuff. And we were out in Florida. I've never done comedy in Florida. I haven't been to Florida in probably 30 years. My mom lives out there now, so she finally got to see me do comedy. She came down to the Orlando Hard Rock, and it was so great to see my mom, and she had a fantastic time. And oh, man, I was just choked up to see her. I was just smiling. It was awesome. You know, when your kid says he's going to start comedy at 44, I'm sure my mom's just like, what? This guy's a lunatic. But there I was in a 1,000-seater, rocking it, having fun, and she got to see it. And I love you, Mom. Thanks for coming. And I love you, Marc, for just bringing me on this tour. It's just a dream come true. This tour has been so much fun. We got some more dates coming up. Go to deandelray.com. It's like it's like some East Coast dates starting on Wednesday. So get into that. Real quick, and then we'll get onto the show. Patreon.com/deandelray. All the bonus episodes. We've got a lot of them up there. I think we're on like almost 60. Brand new Patreoners right now. Welcome Chris Dash, Greg Scott Dulberg, Jingling Baby. All right. Christian Heilmeyer, Scott Redman, and Brandon Winard. Welcome to the Patreon. Love you guys. I also want to tell you guys, do not sleep on the Bon Scott tribute. We have sold, we've got the tickets on sale, and we have sold a lot of tickets. We've got a few left. Go to deandelray.com and get your tickets. It's March 10th at the Avalon in Hollywood. Incredible players. Well, we got Bill Burr's going to play some drums. We got Dave Lombardo's going to play some drums. Steve Gorman is the house drummer for the band. Josh Z, Billy Rowe, and Mike Inez, that is going to be the band, me on vocals, and then a lot of special guests. It is just going to be fire. What do we got? Jerry Cantrell. How cool is that? We got Brad Wilk. Oh, yeah. Scott Holiday from Rival Sons. And some surprises up our sleeve. So that is March 10th, the Bon Scott tribute. I do not want you guys to miss that, because this will be the last one. It's the 40-year anniversary celebration of the great Bon Scott and AC/DC. Okay, Brad, I don't know if you're going to be listening to this, Brad, but I want to say thank you so much. From the bottom of my heart, I cannot thank you enough for doing this show. It means so much to me. And your playing and your music has just rocked my whole life. I'm 54 now, and I've been listening to you since the sixth grade. So you and your band, Steve and Tyler, sounded insane. And everybody rocked it. Enjoy this, people. Spread the word. Subscribe to the YouTube channel. Leave a review on iTunes, please. Keep that going. We want to get that up into the 2,000-3,000 numbers. Candles are lit. Go to those tour dates, too. More Marin dates coming. Here he is, the legend, Rock and Roll Hall of Famer from Aerosmith, Mr. Brad Whitford. This is a pretty fucking cool day. Introduce yourself.
Well, my name is Brad Whitford, and of course I play for Aerosmith, mostly.
Mostly.
Yeah.
I saw you guys last night. Incredible show.
No, thanks.
Joey back.
Yeah.
That after that long week, I don't know if you want to talk about that or whatever, but I know somebody will be like right away, like, hey, you didn't ask him about that, but it whatever, it doesn't matter either way. But there he was back in. Yeah. There you go.
Yeah, he was back in. Yeah.
All right. We'll keep rolling. There you I can't even tell you how much I've been listening to Aerosmith. I'm 53. Day on the Green.
Oh, Day on the Green.
Yeah. How great are the Day on the Greens? Man. So you did it in 78. And then you did it in 79, The Monsters, with Nugent. And those Bill Graham shows are pretty much the reason I would say I'm probably alive. Because I went to those and learned, holy smokes, there's a zillion people like me, crazy people, into insane rock and roll. And I was learning at the same time who these bands were, AC/DC, Bush, Oyster Cult, Cheap Trick, Aerosmith, Ted Nugent, Journey, all this stuff. And it completely molded who I am right now to this day. I listen to all those bands still.
Yeah.
And I'm not one of those guys we were talking on the way in. They're like, there's no good music anymore. I'm not that guy. There's tons of good music. But I'm definitely the person I am from those concerts.
Well, yeah, they certainly shaped my life from, you know, forever. So, you know, I was always loved, you know, the guitar, of course, but the first band that I said, that's exactly what I want to do was, I mean, it was the Beatles and the Stones and all that stuff that inspired me enormously. But when I saw Humble Pie, I was like,
oh, wow,
that is the perfect setup. Two guitars, bass, and drums. And I was like, man, I hope I can get something like that happening.
Oh, it's funny. Steve Marriott, you know, it's like,
oh my God, I was friends with Steve, and he was an extremely talented guy. We were in the studio in New York recording, and he would come by once in a while, and we would hang out. Nobody else really kind of understood my fascination, but I was like, I don't care. Take a listen to the live at the Fillmore. That's all I got to tell you. But he came in one day and sat down behind the piano in the studio because they were in the control room mixing or something. And he started playing all this Ray Charles stuff on the piano, and I was like, I didn't even know he played piano.
Wow.
And he was incredible.
I never knew that either.
He was incredible.
Just imagine if he would have played piano in the band also, like another level.
Yeah, he might have played on some of the albums. I didn't really think to ask him, but I was just, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
It was beautiful. So it was a terrible loss.
Did you see Humble Pie?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. How many times?
Oh, I don't know, a lot. I mean, I became friends with the band. I would, They would come to Boston. I'd meet them at their hotel, and we'd hang, you know, and then go to the show. And they were just, Marriott was just like, taking the leash off a wild dog when he hit the stage. And it was like, wow, it was one of the best performers.
Yeah, yeah. There's guys out there like that, you know, there's these culty bands, like, say, Cactus or Frankie Miller or Steve Marriott, that people just... It's like a barometer when you're at a party. Somebody brings that up, you're like, oh, I can talk to this guy.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
Where were you seeing shows in Boston? What theater there?
Well, there was the Orpheum. Saw a lot of shows at the Garden. And Boston, the Music Hall, it was called. And, you know, the Music Hall was pretty nice. I saw Mountain there a couple of times. I saw Jeff Beck there. And then the Orpheum Theater, great place. I saw the Expensive Winos in there.
Oh, great.
Stevie Ray Vaughan.
You catch Zeppelin ever?
Yeah. Yeah, several times. The first time I saw them was absolutely the best time I ever saw them. The second album wasn't even out yet.
Oh, wow.
And they played some cuts from the album, which was cool. I mean, it's like, whoa, this is awesome. But it wasn't out yet. I think it was maybe their first or second trip to the States. And I was just blown away, man. They were just on the stage. They were just wearing, looked like been wearing the same clothes for about a week.
Yes.
Just T-shirts and jeans, you know, and... Just killing it. And it was like, and Jimmy was on fire. He was that was the most precise playing I heard from him, because he had a, you know, he had this kind of slop.
Yeah, he definitely had that.
And it's cool for him, you know, I thought it was cool for him to do it, but when I saw him live a couple of times, it was just like, wasn't cutting it.
Yeah.
But I think he was, you know, under the influence by that time of booze and who knows what else. So
that insane touring schedule they were just doing, you know, just show after show after show, no rest, traveling around. I'm sure that's just like a spinner on them also.
Well, that's brutal. I mean, we've done that, and the concerts are fine, but the travel and having to get to and from it's just brutal. That's the hard part.
Yeah, we're sitting here talking about these massage guns, and I'm like, oh, yeah. I got one of those. I can't go anywhere without it. And you're like, I got three. And it's like, it's so true. Imagine early on if we knew what we knew now, like, let's just try to eat clean, sleep. We'd probably live to be 100, you know, but, you know, shitty airplanes, bad food, no sleep, all that. And it just, man, it takes years off of you.
It does. And I was brushing my teeth this morning, and I was like, because I watch a lot of history, and I'm interested in geology and all sorts of stuff, and paleontology, all kinds of stuff. But I was looking about all these skulls from thousands of years ago, and they have a full row of healthy teeth.
Wow.
I was like, okay. You know why? Because there wasn't any shit in their food.
I know.
They were eating food from the ground and from the animals around, and nothing was dirty yet.
No Roundup, you know. Oh, fucking Roundup poisoning, you know.
I can't believe they still use that shit.
It's unbelievable, right? It is crazy.
You know, it's clean food is a challenge. And I mean, I eat a really healthy diet.
Yeah.
Because you have to.
You have to.
There's no way around, you know, because you eat all this other... The fucking food is poison. Everything is poison. It's like a battle, you know, to try and eat clean and try and live the good life. And
it's crazy, right?
Live on the right side of things. Yeah.
It's so wild. It's like... All of a sudden, I got high blood pressure. I'm like, what's that from? I eat totally clean. You don't even know what it's from. Oh, it's this protein bar. It has 300 milligrams of sodium. And next thing you know, I'm like, oh God, I eat two of those a day after I work out. You know, you don't even know. Everything's just loaded with sodium or sugar or some kind of weird poison.
All inflammatory.
All inflammatory.
Of all of it.
Yeah. You've been playing all your life. What kind of aches and pains do you got? Arthritis, anything? All inflammatory stuff?
Yeah, I discovered I had arthritis in my back decades ago. Because we saw it on an x-ray, and doctor goes, see all this white stuff? White stuff, it's arthritis. Fortunately, I've done a lot of, between yoga and stretching and the kind of, I do inversion therapy. My back doesn't really bother me. The only wear and tear I have is in my right shoulder. I have a bunch of torn, ligaments and things like that. And it's, when it flares up, it's like on fire. But fortunately, I can, as long as I didn't, he has to put my guitar over my head for me, because if I lift this arm up too high, I get in danger of aggravating it. He gets the guitar on me, and then, it doesn't really impede my playing. It just sometimes it hurts a little bit, but as long as I keep the movements to a minimum, I can play.
Wow.
And it's weird, because we did a show Saturday night, and it was pretty okay. And then I went up to the dressing room after the show, just gathering my belongings and changing really quick before I left. And right somewhere in there, it just went bam. And I have a nice bag right over there.
Oh, man.
Been icing and stuff, trying to calm it down. So that's about, and my hearing.
Your hearing, yeah.
Everybody I know.
You go hearing aids at all?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Jeff Beck, Clapton, Steve Lukather, Rick Nielsen, we all went through that period where everybody told us, you better watch it, your ears are going to get, and we were like, ah.
Yeah, yeah.
It takes a toll. And, when you do it for 50 years.
Yeah.
I mean, I had, really bad tinnitus. My hearing was going really south. So I had to do something about it. It was just the greatest thing in the world, actually.
Yeah, yeah. I think I got to get some hearing aids. Yeah. I had Robbie Krieger on last week, and I was like, I was just answering questions, oh, yeah, yeah. I could barely hear what, my hearing shot. I was like, what? Then I got home, I put headphones on, and I listened. I go, wow, I missed that. I didn't even hear what he said that. It's
very aggravating.
It is. Especially movies. It's like, blah, 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 blah. I wear earplugs now at all times at the shows. And I love going to shows, so I don't want to stop going.
No, but yeah, as long as, you got to keep your exposure at a minimum. And, I used to wear the yellow barrel ones.
Yep.
And I found those to be my favorite device for cutting the noise. And it was interesting, because when I first put them on and was using it, it was like, whoa, this is not going to work, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's blocked out too much.
But what happened was, I kept up with it, and eventually your ears are not getting assaulted, so they relax. And after a very short while, it was loud to me.
Yeah, yeah.
I could hear everything great, but it went from like almost impossible to hearing everything, and not only hearing everything, it was now loud. With a 30 or 28 dB or 30 dB plug-in.
Yeah, I wore those same ones last night at your show.
So those work great. And you first put them in, but you just got to give it a chance, and you'll still hear everything. I've tried a lot of filters. I think they've improved on those, but I haven't tried any lately.
Yeah.
And I try and limit my exposure to, you know, loud noises and stuff.
Do you go out and see any live music these days at all?
I'll probably mostly go see my sons play.
Yeah.
You know, Graham is in the Tyler Bryant and the Shakedown, and they're doing great.
They're smoking it.
And unfortunately, like everybody else, like rival sons, and they have to go to Europe. And they have a huge following there. My son Harrison just came back from Europe. He was touring over there. And he's like, Saturday night, he got up and played with Jackson Brown.
Wow. That's so cool.
He's good friends with Jackson. He's really good friends with Blake Mills. Do you know Blake?
Yeah.
And he's an absolute genius on the guitar. It's like crazy.
Wow. I watched that opening film last night, which, by the way, is fantastic. You guys should put that out. I really liked watching that. I mean, I know a lot about the band. I've seen the band all my life. And, you know, you guys had some fun stuff like the Making a Pump video and stuff. But that thing had this really amazing flow. It's about 28 minutes and you're just taking in this, all of this information of this band you've been in since 1971. And you just look at all the ups and downs of this band and think, like, these guys are complete soldiers, man. I mean, just history right there.
Oh, yeah. Now, I can't think of the people that put that together. They're one of the big effects and producers of this kind of stuff in Los Angeles. They do work for all the big films and stuff. And you watch all these special effects films now, and you see they contract all these different this CGI company, and then they give them, you know, we want you to do this scene, we want you to do this scene, you know, it's amazing how they do that, kind of contracting out all these companies to complete the movies. Pretty cool. But they did a great job on that piece.
They killed it. The whole show is pretty over the top. I'm glad I didn't talk to anybody about exactly what it was, but you know, while the film's going on, there's these crazy dancers out there, and yeah. the show, the production, like, you know, where they're playing ragtime, you know, Ragdoll, the crazy video stuff, and then like the fireflies, and then the leaves on Seasons of Wither, all that stuff was just smoking, man. It wasn't like, it was so over the top great. And then the sound was mind boggling. Sounded great.
Really?
Oh yeah, man. I was at some great seats and the whole thing was smoking. I loved your tone too. I was checking out your amps before the show. The orangutan, what is that? The orangutan Pro, and then that Magnetone.
Mm-hmm.
That's a great. It was just a great classic sound. I realized last night, and I don't know why I never put this together, but as I was watching Last Child, I realized, oh, okay, Slash grabbed the Brad Plane and then the Joe persona and kind of put them together, you know? And it really came to me on your lead on Last Child. I was like, this is absolutely Slash. You know, that's all of him. He just grabbed that, you know? It's wild. And the first time I saw you, too, back in 79, I was like, oh, Brad plays lead, too. I had no idea, you know, when you're a kid. There's no videos. I mean, maybe Midnight Special or whatever, but you're like, oh, yeah, Brad's he's the secret weapon on this group.
Yeah, nobody, back in those days, you know, like the album credits and stuff, it was just, you know, rhythm guitar and is what we would put down. And I actually, looking back on it, I loved it because it was like, and then I'd come out and slay you. Because yeah. I think I'm just going to play rhythm guitar. You got another thing coming.
Oh, my God. You just kill, man.
But Slash did say to me back, well, this was in the 90s, but he said. But he said that exact thing to me. And then I think one of the first solos I heard him do, I was like, okay, yeah, that's, you know.
Yeah.
Gosh, I love him. He's such a sweetheart, and he's such an excellent guitar player.
Oh, yeah, and a great riff writer. As I watch you, and I started thinking last night, who were your guys? Of course, Joe Perry on the video said he went to see Jimmy. He was like, I gotta do Jimi Hendrix. But what were you grabbing onto? Was it like Peter Green? Was it Jimmy Page? What were your guys?
Well, the biggest, probably the one I listened to the most was Clapton. I loved his flow. I loved his tone. That was the foundation, really, for my tone on my sound. I was like, that's the best.
The right Cream there. Era?
Yep. Of course, John Mayall. And I just loved that. I love that approach. I mean, we were in the studio here last year. I was doing some work for Buck Johnson on his record. And, you know, Greg brought over a couple of guitars and my sock monkey, with three monkeys, sock monkey. And we plugged that in. I think we used the cabinet, the Three Monkeys cabinet, and then we used put it into a Marshall cabinet, but just straight in, no effects, nothing, and just played mostly a bunch of solos on this stuff. And it's like, you know, people say, wow, fucking, how did you get that tone? And it's like, what were you using? I go, my guitar, and an amp,
yeah,
like. You know, no, there's no pedals on there. It's just, and that's why it jumps out of the track, too, because it's
not all processed.
There's no processing on it. It's just, so it sounds very in your face. But sometimes, I mean, tone influences were huge because the guys that are, you know, Hendrix was huge and Jeff Beck was huge for me on tone. And of course, Hendrix, yeah, and Stevie Ray. It just incredible. And so I really wanted to, you know, I wanted to play it. I wanted to play it right. And I like, you know, I like clean, defined notes. And I like space around it. I like, you know, use the, you know, because it's not all about, you know, shredding. It's shredding. I just don't get it.
Yeah.
I can appreciate some of it. Somebody does it really good, like Steve Vai.
Yeah.
He's just amazing what he does. And Satriani. But there are guys that can shred, but, you know, especially Joe. Joe can play a lot of shit besides shredding. And he's talk about tone, too.
I mean, that Steve Vai stuff on the early Eat 'Em and Smile, the early David Lee Roth stuff, that stuff is just incredible.
Well, actually, what my favorite is the newest stuff he's doing, I think, is just fucking phenomenal. But both friends of mine, Steve and Joe, and just, again, very special people.
Yeah.
Really awesome guys.
Yeah, and look how long Joe's... I just had Kirk Hammett on, you know. He was Kirk's teacher.
Yeah.
You know, he played, I grew up in the Bay Area, you know. He played all over San Francisco in that band he had. And I had no idea that he even could play like that.
Yeah.
You know, until that Surfing with the Alien came out. I was like, wait, that's that same dude. You know, he'd be playing like Berkeley Square or something in a kind of a new wavy band.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then there he is, just destroying it, right. Taking out. And Kirk Hammett actually said that their response to Satriani was the Injustice for All album. They're like, we're not getting enough credit being players, so let's just do a record with 800 parts and let people know we can play.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, that is cool. I'm a massive, massive fan of Done With Mirrors, which I know you guys don't like, right? I mean, from what I've read over the years.
It's just not something that... I felt like that album was never finished. Steven, the master of the lyric for rock and roll stuff, he wasn't in a very creative frame of mind lyrically, and it was kind of... my favorite song, I think, is My Fist Your Face. On that.
It's a great one.
And
Sheila, you wrote that.
Yeah.
That's a great one.
Oh, thanks. Thanks. I don't know. There's a lot of riffing on there, and it's kind of fun, but I don't know.
Yeah, and you guys...
It's no Rocks or Toys.
Well, of course not. But if you're coming out of the rumblings of Rock and a Hard Place, where the band's pretty much... You know, I mean, you're not in the band. Joe's not in the band. I saw the band during that era at a Sacramento State Fair. It was one of the most insane things. I was like, this band is done. It is done. Yeah. I couldn't even believe what I was seeing. And then to come back, I went to the tour. It was back in the Saturday. You guys played Oakland Coliseum. The supposed sober... But we're sober now, and I'm like, wait a minute. Yeah, I'm watching dudes throw up on the side of the stage. It was crazy. But I love Ted Templeman, and I thought that that record really, really had this bizarre thing to it.
Oh, it did.
Well, yeah, when you listen to it, it's like, oh, this sounds completely different.
I wish I could have. I wish we had better material, because I was a huge... fan of Ted's too, and I loved everything he was doing, and I mean, it was fucking great. And I just, because I really hit it off with him, and I just looking back, I wish we had more better material, because we had the producer of the day there working with us, and he got very frustrated as well. Sometimes that happens with,
yeah,
especially in my band, or a lot of band, every band really.
You guys did that at Fantasy in the Bay Area.
Yeah.
And you guys were kind of going out. There were sightings. You'd be out at, like, the Stone or, you know, going out at night.
Yeah,
while you weren't recording. That was kind of exciting for Bay Area. People like, Aerosmith was around here. You'd be like, no. you always hear stuff. But, yeah, that studio is fantastic. Oh, it's gone now, but wow.
Is it gone?
Yeah. I think that, you know, Saul's, I think, owned that, and then he passed away or whatever, and then they kind of tried to keep it open for years, and I think it closed about 5 years ago. Hmm. But what an amazing studio. When you look at the records and the producers you worked with, Jack Douglas, stuff, you know, Ted Templeman, people like that, who was a guy that you really thought, oh, this guy's actually creating a sound for it, getting it right? Because some guys just come in and they don't do nothing, right?
Yeah, I mean, they're all different. The guys that come in, it's just a certain chemistry sometimes where somebody, look at it and go, ooh, I know how I can make it. I'm not going to mess with it, but I know how I can make it better. And Jack was like that. We considered Jack the sixth member of the band. And we had so much fun making those records. And he just was so instrumental in getting so many things done in pre-production. And he helped me a lot with some music I was working on, and of course everybody, but I'm making the especially, you know, Rocks and Toys were done on 16 tracks and
two inch
and it was just, everything was hands-on, you know. There was no computers at all.
Now you're cutting tape, splicing.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
Splicing tape, the mixing, you know, it would be like
three, four guys
sometimes on the board. So every mix was a performance.
Yeah, during the pass.
You didn't have a computer like, oh, yeah, okay, I remember that mix. You know, just, oh, let's start again. You didn't have to wait for, you don't have to wait for tape to rewind. But that was like, I don't know, there was something great about that, you know. Just actually sitting there and waiting for a tape to rewind, give you a chance to kind of, whatever, or clear your head or whatever. Because I was like, if I didn't get it on the first take, I'm not getting it today.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
I would start, it's like, okay, I'd do it. And then I'd start thinking about it. And I'm like, and that fucks it up.
Absolutely. Then you get in your head.
Yeah, I just want it to come out. And that was always the best stuff. You know, I just played, you know, like the solo and, you know, all that stuff in Last Child. That's one take.
Wow.
The stuff in Nobody's Fault. It's one take. No editing with the, yeah. So that's just the way I like to do it. That's, to me, the most inspired you're going to get.
Well, I mean, also, you start nitpicking it. You ever nitpick something, and then a couple years later, you go back and listen to it, and you go,
This is great.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
You're just such under a microscope, and the pressure. You know, you got that first record comes out, you got the hit with Dream On, and then it's, you go to do the next record, now it's like real pressure.
Yeah.
And you know, people are like, is this good enough? And you just start going crazy. You know?
Right.
It's brutal, man. I look at what I love about Aerosmith, and you know, if I just look at the songs I love, it's all the dark, dark, deep tracks. It's pretty wild to think about, like, even Pump is Janie's Got a Gun to most people.
Yeah.
But when you look at Pump, man, there is some dark stuff on there. It just blows my mind. You know, F-I-N-E, I love that. And then Monkey on My Back. It's just this funk track about dope, and it's just fire. But the dark tracks, you know, SOS Too Bad, Last Night You Did Chip Away at the Stone.
Yeah.
It's just like those tunes. You guys have album after album after album where you get past, like, let's say Walk This Way and Toys in the Attic, and then all of a sudden you're like, whoa, look at this stuff here. And that stuff really blows my mind. It is actual perfect 70s rock.
Mm-hmm.
You know? I mean, if you wanted a definition of 70s rock, I would think it'd be deep tracks of Aerosmith. It's pretty wild to me. I love Les Paul, 59. Do you remember when you got your first one?
The first 59?
Yeah.
No. I had quite a few nice ones. I was building a little collection, and I ended up having to get rid of it because of financial woes. I got sold most of them.
During the down era?
Yeah, during just this period where I was not getting paid. My royalties, nothing. It was just a mess. But and this happened several times where I called up one of my friends and said, you know that burst that you like that one I have? He says, I got to sell it. And 45 minutes later, they'd be at my door with the cash. And I mean, it's just water under the dam. I mean, but the first vintage Les Paul I got, it kills me that I don't have anymore. But I was on Sunset Boulevard walking around, and I ran into I'll get the name. I can't think of the name, but we became great friends over the years. But he had I met him in this store, and he's got two vintage cases with him. And he goes, oh, you know, I'm selling these two. And he opens the case. I don't even remember what the other one was. But he opened this case, and it was a 57 gold top with a Bigsby on it.
Oh, wow.
And this thing, was awesome. Just awesome. I used it on a bunch of the records. And that one, I wish I'd never gotten away from me, because it was just a beautiful guitar, sounded amazing. But that went by the wayside. And then I had to kind of start up again. And I got, actually the first 59 I got after all that shit went down, and years later I got a triple pickup custom 59 from Norm.
Oh yeah, Norm.
And thing is just amazing. It's still got the original fretless Wonder neck on it. Everybody says, oh, put some frets on it. I go, no way.
Yeah, yeah. The ebony fretboard with those small frets.
It's like if I do that, I'll destroy this guitar. And I actually like playing it the way it is. I actually like the fretless Wonder thing. And then I got another 59 in the 90s. Joe and I were in, we were in the studio in New York, and Perry Margoloff, a good friend of ours, he was taking care of, was managing, what's his name's collection? Oh yeah, Dirk Ziff, right? Yeah. And Dirk had this, and he has an enormous guitar collection. And he told Perry, he says, oh, I'd love to come by the studio and see some of their, you know, Les Pauls. And Perry gets back to him and says, they don't have any other nice Les Pauls anymore. They're using, you know, other stuff, because they, you know, Joe had lost some to, in the divorce crazy.
Yeah, that one
bullshit
that Slash ended up with.
Yeah. And so he was like very sympathetic to that, and he sent over to the studio five 59s.
Five? Right? Holy smokes.
And he said, you know, pick one out.
No.
And I'll give you a great deal. And I'm like, I want to get, I fucking want this one here. And he charged me $20,000.
Man.
Guitars were worth probably, what, 85, 90 at that point?
Yeah. Wow.
20 grand because he felt bad for us.
Wow. You still got it, right?
Oh, fuck yeah. That's actually the Gibson Collector's Choice that I did, is a copy of that.
God,
that 59. So I have that. The custom. I have a new, I got a 58 like 2 years ago from Norm that is so ridiculous.
I love 58s. That baseball bat neck.
It is the cleanest guitar, one of the cleanest guitars I've ever seen. The pickup covers don't have any scratches on them. They're not worn at all. This guy that owned the guitar took it out of the case once a week on Sunday, played it, wiped it down, put it back in the case, and he did that for as long as he had it until he passed away. Then his son and the mom went into Norm's and sold it to Norm. Norm showed it to me, and on a Friday, we were at NAMM, Friday we went up to see Norm. And all weekend long, it was fucking absolutely driving me crazy. It was driving me crazy. And then Monday, I called him up and said, I'm taking that thing.
Yo, man.
I have to have it. And if I had it here, you would,
oh,
you would like, you would not believe it. And it kind of goes with I have a 54.
Oh, yeah.
Strat.
Oh, wow. Great one.
That is in the same condition.
Oh, I love the 54
Strat.
It's like
brand new.
Wow. And do you play them at all?
Yeah.
That's so great.
I don't take them on the road. It's
no, of course not.
Too worrisome now, but yeah, I've got a bunch of really nice Strats. I've got, you know, I've got a wonderful 56 Strat.
You a Tele guy at all?
Yeah, I have a 56 that is also in beautiful condition, and that's one of the best ones I have. The best one I ever played, though, was Joe Bonamassa has this, I hope he still has it, it's a 53, kind of the dark ones, and it's like That thing sounds amazing. The other one I had was I had a Broadcaster.
Oh, so amazing.
Serial number was 0027.
Oh my God, number 27? Oh, I love the Broadcaster. The lunacy of the logo saying Broadcaster. Mm-hmm. I just love that. You know, to me, the Blackguard Tellies are just, there's something completely different about those guitars. You put it on, they're like songwriting machines. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you just, if you're like a guy like you're into roots rock and roll, you put that thing on and it just starts coming out, you know?
Right.
There's something about that. With an AC-15, you know, like a Fawn AC-15.
Oh, I have one of those, the hand-wired one. It's like, that's one of my favorite amps.
That's the best amp made, I think.
It's cool, yeah.
When you were recording all those classic records, say Toys and Rocks, and were you just using Plexi with a Les Paul?
Yeah.
Straight in, that's it?
Yep.
God, it sounds so insane. I was listening to the records last night. I was up to like 3, just reliving it, you know, and just, I was like, listen to the sound of these records. They're smoking. Yeah. Even on the fucking shitty digital form of an iTunes track, it sounds amazing.
I was thinking about the Ross Halfen got me these Japanese CD. It's called Rocks Sessions, and it's all the basic tracks from the album.
Oh wow! So it's a bootleg.
Yeah, it's the basic tracks, is the first run through of each song, so it's really fun to listen to because some of the tempos were manipulated a little bit after that, and then some of the tracks are interesting because some of them there's only 3 guys playing. Sometimes I'm playing and Joe isn't, sometimes Joe's playing, I'm not, sometimes we're both playing. I even did a solo on one of the tracks that we capped on, right on the basic track. I just went for it. But really fun listen.
No, I love that.
Yeah. You know, all the no overdubs at all yet.
Stripped away.
And it's just fucking kicks. It really kicks.
What I love about you guys, and this was the difference between you guys and, say, the Stones, which were both incredible, but you guys seriously are a funk band, man. It's wild how funky you guys can get and lay into these James Brown type of, you know, like Sight for Sore Eyes or Last Child. Those things are like funk grooves, full on. Is like, where did that come from? Is that a Steven thing or something? Because he seems like he's really funky as far as lyrically and grooving, you know. That's like His soul seems to be into that, you know?
Yeah, Steven's he's pretty prolific with, because I think he can sing with anybody and a lot of different styles and do it justice. But the whole fun, like when we were first got together, we all kind of brought our stuff to the table. And Joey had been playing in an R&B band at the time. So he brought a lot of, and he loved James Brown and stuff. So we started learning a couple of James Brown songs. And it was just, the funk thing just kind of came natural to us.
Yeah, I mean, it's really evident, you know, on the fourth side of Live Bootleg, you know, Mother's Popcorn and that stuff. I mean, it's just like, I remember hearing that as a kid. I was just listening to rock, and that was kind of my introduction to, like, what is this? This is cool. Something like it hot, you know. Dun, 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 dun.
Yeah.
And you get into that, and you're like, what is this? And then later on, you start peeling it back and finding stuff backwards. That's how it always happens to me. It's oh, this is coming from, you know, and all that great 70s funk that was happening back then. And then, of course, James Brown. But, you know, Curtis Mayfield, I was a huge fan of him. Yeah, and all that stuff, you know.
Cause, and then, You know, and then the Chili Peppers come along, and I was like, yes. And they took it to the next level. And I just, those guys, I mean, Flea just blows my mind. Flea and Chad are just the most amazing rhythm section.
Oh, that Mother's Milk era, you know.
Oh.
You know, can't you see me getting high? Knock me down. You know, that,
yeah.
That's it. And then when they're doing Higher Ground, and it just sounds all authentic, you know. You're like, how? These guys are nailing this,
they're,
man.
They're nailing it, man. Yeah.
Yeah, big time. Have you heard Marcus King?
A little bit.
That guy, man, 24, could be the best player I've seen out of the last 20 years, hands down. Because he's got a little Allman Brothers, but he can also get into some funk, and he can play some soul, R&B, but it all sounds like their band. I think you would really love seeing them live. It's just,
yeah, I would. Yeah, you're familiar with Johnny Hyland, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, sort of a neighbor, because we don't live too far from each other. I'm fortunate. I got all kinds of, there's all kinds of players, singers, you name it, in around where I live, so yeah. It's very cool.
Yeah.
When I go back home, I'm going to work with David Santos and Joe Vitale. It'd be very interesting to see what's going to come out of that.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. Did you enjoy doing the Hendrix Experience tour?
Love it.
Yeah.
Love it. It's just great bunch of guys. Stories like you wouldn't believe. I mean, the bus rides were probably better than the gigs.
They should film those.
You know, just everybody in this, you know. And it's Satriani and Eric Johnson and Kenny Wayne and, gosh, Scott Nelson, Chris Layton, and all these incredible artists. And super, like, it was, and it's run right, you know. It's like, you know, we got a bus call at 9 o'clock in the morning. If you show up at 9, you're late.
Oh, wow.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
We and so, to me, it was like,
yeah,
this is professional.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I can't tell you how many times I've fucking waited in an airport or lobby or whatever for the rest of my fucking band.
Well, that's drugs, right?
It's a fucking lack of, it's disrespectful as whatever the fuck it is.
Yeah.
But, you know, it just, and so to go out and work with real pros, unlike my band, they're professional in their performances, but fucking nothing else. And I don't have a problem saying that. But yeah, it was wonderful, and it's such a. God, we watched these Eric Gales and Eric Johnson jamming together, like literally blow your absolute brains out. I mean, it was just like, holy Christ, it was. And
Billy Cox.
Plus, I got to play with all of these people, you know. I got to play with Buddy Guy.
Wow.
You know,
Buddy Guy.
We would do like Red House and of course Billy. You know, Billy is another Nashville guy, and he's amazing. And you go listen to the shit he did, you know. Band of Gypsies and stuff, and he's still that good and just a very talented musician and a great guy. But there wasn't any, I mean, the guy that runs it, John, like, there's no attitudes allowed.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean?
If you check him at the door.
If you, yeah, but none of these guys had, you know, none of the guys, there was none of that shit, you know. Everybody's just down to earth, loving the opportunity to play Hendrix songs, and the hang was amazing. I mean, we'd be being back in the dressing room, and Robert Randolph.
Oh yeah,
would start playing his thing in the dressing room, and it was just this mountain circle around him, and he was he's just amazing. I mean, it's hard to explain.
Yeah, it's like a brotherhood out there, because you guys are all fans of Jimi Hendrix.
Yeah.
And so when you come together, it's like I do this Bon Scott tribute once a year. I absolutely worship Bon Scott. And I bring together some of the biggest rock stars in the business. And it's amazing to see them talking to each other like, God, I love like Shot Down in Flames. Is he doing it like this? And I'm seeing the bonding of these people. All because of this man. And that's the same thing with Hendrix.
Yeah.
You're going, I think he played it up here. You know? And I always played it this way. And it just becomes this unreal brotherhood across America during this tour. But I do think that early on, you've been in the band so long, it's like Metallica, I talked to them. You're these guys, you're fresh out of high school. And you're this brotherhood, and then you're just in it so long, and people grow as adults, and you're just like, whoa, this guy's totally different than when I knew him when I was 22 years old. You know, that's pretty bizarre, right? Because you've been with some, you know, I talk about it a lot. There's only two bands with original members, ZZ Top and you guys. You know, that's it.
Yeah,
I mean, if you think, I can't think of any other band. And, I mean, Green Day, let's say, but that's like a newer band, you know, but I'm saying out of the old days. And then you look at it as like, you guys, you're going to be, 69 or something in a couple weeks?
I'll be, oh my God, wait a minute.
Are you 68?
Oh my God. Yeah, I guess so.
You know what I mean? So you look at it as like, well, I've known these guys longer than anyone in my life, other than your parents. And that can be strange, to be around people that long, you know?
Well, yeah, because we were kids. And, you know, we all grew into different
people,
relationships and stuff with girlfriends and wives and children, and then you become, you know, your priorities shift, and but the one thing that Aerosmith was kind of collectively, we're just so committed to doing what we were doing, it became like food.
Yeah.
You know, it was like I don't know. It's been a real tremendous blessing to have the ability to expand on the talent I was given and to be in a band that kind of outlasted everybody and make a, they're still playing our old records on the radio, if whatever, somewhere, satellite probably, not on commercial radio, but, you know, it's like, wow, still, and I appreciate it more and more all the time, because I just, you know, reflect on it, and it's been an amazing journey. Yeah.
Do you enjoy playing the newer stuff? Are you into it at all, like Pink? And stuff that because you're kind of like Def Leppard, where you're this one 70s behemoth. You know, Def Leppard had like High and Dry record and On Through the Night, and then they have Hysteria and Pyromania and become a completely different fan. So, you know, here I am. You do a 1-2-3 punch last night open, and then you go into Pink. Do you get off on it the same way, or is it because, okay, I know the fans want it, there's different age groups of fans here or different entryways into the band?
For me, I always take it a little bit of a challenge for myself to, I'm just focusing on what I'm doing, and I know I can always do better. And I get to, you know, and I like I don't mind playing. I don't mind playing any of our songs. There's some that I would never play again. It's kind of a short list, but no, I don't. It's fun to play those, and I try. You know, sometimes I'll take a little bit different tack, and I go, "Oh, that really works. I'll do that." You know, so it's just a platform for me to get to do my thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and I try and bring something. You know, I'm trying to bring something every time that I can't. You know. Sometimes when you're playing, you have plateaus and little stagnation times, and that shit drives me crazy when that happens. But it's like, okay, you've reached a level, so guess what do you do? Shoot for another goal. I'm going to tackle, you know, this. And then the study and the practice get you to the next level. You know,
yeah.
You got to work. Got to work on it.
You got to do the work.
You know?
How do you guys do the set list? It's got to be a nightmare, right? I mean, you're like, here's the set list.
At this point, it's pretty, you know, we have a number of songs that we know we're going to do. And then we have some spots where we, you know, we'll change things around from show to show, which is fun.
Yeah.
To keep it fresh and keep you on your toes a little bit, because I mean all these songs, I mean I know them like the back of my hand, but a lot of times I gotta play, you know, I want to have a rehearsal, I just want to play it once through just to because my brain's full of shit, so
yeah.
Not shit, my brain's full of great ideas. But but it's nice just to be able to run through the stuff and not, you know, like our first show on this run, it was like a practice session because we had a rehearsal in LA, but of course we didn't use the time to actually get any real work done, which is also very typical of this band.
Oh.
Very frustrating. You know, we had the time to go through the set probably three times. And we ended up, you know, became a monitor rehearsal for Steven, who still doesn't have his monitors right. He's been battling that forever. And nobody's quite sure what he's looking for. but that's his deal, you know.
I don't know.
My monitors are great.
I love your honesty, man. You know, it's like, hey, this is... It's not all shiny out there, you know?
No, it's actually pretty fucking dark where I have to work, actually. So
that had to be an interesting era where you were out with Joe Perry Project.
Yep.
And Steven was taking the Aerosmith around. What were you guys like? Because there's not like any internet or anything back there. Were you guys just like, what the fuck? Let's do this. Or were you just like, nah, never again. This is us. That's him. Was that happening?
Well, there was, it was a deep divide between Joe and Steven. And I was like, I said this, you know, it'll be fixable if they just communicate with each other at some point. And I said, otherwise, I don't think it's going to happen, you know, to come back. And then, you know, Joe was like, you know, I've been talking to Steven a little bit. And I'm like, oh. And I was right. That's what happened. They threw the axes under the couch. And then it was like, you know, 84, 83, 84, right around that time, like just the beginning of 84. And it was like, okay, let's give this thing a shot again.
Yeah. You've been sober ever since then, right?
No.
No?
No.
Fell off?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
What are you into, weed?
Oh, I love weed.
Yeah, right?
I love weed, but that's not a problem for me. I had...
booze?
I didn't... alcohol was kind of like poison to me, but I got physically addicted to it for a time. And And then as I got away from it, and then I would, then I started to back up, thought I was, you know, I could drink normally. And, you know, I did that for a while, but then, you know, and it's physically, it's so debilitating.
Ugh.
Mentally and physically. And but I was also depressed for years. And I finally discovered that I was bipolar.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And so I got on the right medication, and it turned my life around.
What are you on for that?
Well, I take, I think it's lametrazine, something like that.
Yeah.
It was first used for seizure. It was a seizure medicine. And but they found out, it's like, whoa, this is doing wonders for my patients that are bipolar.
When did you find out about that? Was it like in the last 20 years or?
Actually, the bipolar was just recently diagnosed, and I started treatment last year. So I take that anti-seizure medicine and also Lexapro.
Yeah.
And yeah, it changed my life completely.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, that's great, you know?
Oh, God, yeah. I mean, I was towards the end of dealing with the depression. It was awful, and it was awful. And my lovely Lisa here actually saved my life.
Wow! I battle all kinds of demons like that. You know, I try to knock them out natural by diet and lots of exercise. But it's especially when you're in the arts, man. It's
so prevalent.
Wow, it's so prevalent, man.
We're pretty sure. Oh, that drug was called Lamictal.
Oh yeah, okay.
Lamictal. But it's very, you know, I see people all the time and they go, lots of my fellow players, I think probably, like it kind of goes along with the work that you do, you know, it's a lot of times you're isolating yourself, but you have to get the work in. It takes, you know, cause it takes a lot of work, and it takes a lot of work and a lot of time, and you don't typically sit and rehearse or practice with someone else. You're just doing your own thing, so that's very isolating, and in a good way.
Yeah,
but it may have some. I don't know. I think some of us are just predisposed to have these kind of problems.
Yeah. How quick did it turn around once you started taking the medication? Was it like weeks later?
It was very quick. It was in a matter of days it was starting to work for me.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Especially as people get older, they tend to be stuck in their ways, and they're like, well, this is just who I am.
This is who I am.
Yeah.
This is who I've grown into. Yeah, and that will sneak in there and mess you up, because the power that this syndrome or whatever, denial of who we are, and unable to take a hard look in the mirror and take like a personal inventory and get that, you know, you get connected to, you know, embracing things, that emotions that we deal with that we try and push away. You know, you have to open your anger. Come on in, I'll deal with you. You know, sadness, we're designed to have these emotions, so you got to let them happen and you got to own it and then find ways to unload up a lot of that, you know, because we have a tremendous amount of that stuff stored in our body that's not doing us any good.
No.
If you can find ways to get that stuff out, and I do some kind of like body work, meditation stuff, that, and the goal is to, you kind of go to another state of consciousness that, where you kind of leave the body behind and you're able to like access that stuff, and it's just like you got this storage tank inside here somewhere that's holding on to all this crap for a lifetime, and you store it, but you can get it out if you put the work in that. You can unload all that stuff and just free up.
Yeah, man,
to work the way it's supposed to.
I've been trying some meditation in the last couple months. You know, just trying to. You know, I'm a comedian now. I played music all my life, and
yeah.
I'm a comedian now for the last 10 years, and I'm 54, so I started 10 years ago, and I've worked harder than I've ever worked in my life at an older age, and you know, your brain just the stress of doing something at this age, trying to make it. You know, it's like, it's almost lunacy. Like, oh, I gotta do this comedy. I gotta get funny. Hopefully, I can just keep working. I'm not looking to get famous. I'm not looking to be rich. I'm just looking to work. And when I'm on stage, I'm absolutely in heaven. And it's the other 24 hours of the day, or 23, that I gotta deal with.
Mm-hmm.
And which are lots of ups and downs. Like, you know, last night when I'm backstage looking at your guitars and everything, I'm so high from it that I'm almost hyperventilating. Like, whoa, man, look at that. It was like so much to take in. Whoa, I'm here, Aerosmith. This is crazy, you know?
Yeah.
And then you get back to the room and you're just trying to like, whew, man, I gotta. It's a mental health is definitely a journey, you know. Are you into comedy?
Oh gosh, yeah.
Yeah, who do you like? You know, some of the greatest comedians, Carrot Top.
My buddy.
He's so good, man. That show is incredible, yeah. Right? But some of the greatest comedians ever are from Boston. I mean, ever.
Yeah. Oh yeah. There's a lot of really great talent there. I speaking of Boston, there was a small jazz club there called Paul's Mall. I forget the street, but Aerosmith played there. But I saw Richard Pryor there back in the day.
Whoa!
In a little club.
Yeah.
Oh my God! It was unbelievable.
Whoa!
Unbelievable.
Did he do like an hour or two?
Whoa. He went on, and the place was just everybody was rolling.
Oh my God! That's so cool.
Yeah, it was incredible.
Do you remember if there was an opener, like Paul Mooney or somebody, or no, you just remember seeing Pryor?
I don't remember an opener.
Yeah. God, that's cool. Who else did you see?
I don't think anybody would have dared got up with him.
Yeah.
Why bother?
Well, I saw you guys, I've seen you guys like 30 times, and I don't remember any of the openers, you know? And there were some big bands, you know?
Yeah.
Do you see any other comedians? Have you seen like Carlin or any of those guys back in the day?
Yeah. I met George. Loved Carlin. And what a genius and a prophet.
Yeah.
And funny as all hell. And what a career. Yeah, I mean, gosh. I was at the... Was it the true? Might have been the Troubadour. It was like I think it was open mic night.
Comedy Store?
Might have been the Comedy Store. And
that's my place.
So I was just like, you know, there was a couple of comedians and they were good. And then all of a sudden, Tim Allen shows up.
Oh.
And he just blew the roof off the place. He was so good. And back in those days, and of course a lot of the Boston guys.
Yeah, Bill Burr, like one of the biggest comedians now, is from Boston. I tour with him; he's one of the greatest.
The other night we watched the one he did in London.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And, I mean, we could not stop laughing. We didn't. There was never a moment where I was like. And it was just laugh fest. And he's, oh, God, I love that guy.
He's great, right?
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah, he is. He's definitely one of the best right now.
While you're in town, I know you're here, and you have nights off, you should slip over to the Comedy Cellar. I can hook it up and go there. You're going to see some incredible comedy over here at the Rio Hotel, and it's the New York Comedy Cellar. They built a club here in Vegas, and it's not like some cheesy Vegas thing. It's the real people from New York and L.A. in there working every night.
What about Garrett's place? Is that cool? Garrett's is...
Brad Garrett's is cool also.
Yeah.
But the thing with the cellar is you get like five comics, each doing 20 minutes.
Oh, yeah.
So you can get this great variety each night of like, oh my God, you're going to get some, you know, somebody doing some dark stuff, somebody doing some wacky stuff. Yeah, yeah, look at that. You got the Hulk.
Yes, I do.
Oh my God. All right, we're going to get out of here. You just showed me your watch in a way of getting out of here, but now what you don't understand is I'm a watch guy.
Oh, okay.
I absolutely worship watches and cars, which we got to get you out to dream racing out here and do some get in like a McLaren 720S or the Ferrari 488 Pista and just get on the track, man. It's awesome. How many watches you got?
That's one thing I know how to do.
Drive?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah, you drive. You had a Ferrari, right?
I had several Ferraris, yeah.
But did you have any Dinos or any older stuff like that?
Daytona.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
That was my first Ferrari.
Wow.
Yeah.
What do you have now? Any Ferraris?
No.
You're a Porsche guy at all?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
God.
I had tons of Porsches. I have my second. Just kept my second Porsche, which is a 1973.
Ooh.
And that's very cool. A nice vintage piece. But I have a couple of... I have a Shelby GT350.
Wow.
Which is really a badass car. And I just got a 2019 Corvette C7.
Oh.
And
the last of that body.
Yeah. And I love that car. It's like... You know, and people go, you know, like, oh, the C8, it drives so much better than the C7. And it's like, you know, the guys are giving, you know, they complain, well, the C7's harder to drive if you don't know what you're doing.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
If you've been trained like I was trained, it's like, I love it. Oh, it gets too squirrely. I said, oh, fuck. Why does it get too squirrely? Because it's got a shitload of power. But if you know how to drive,
yeah,
nothing's squirrely to me.
That's like the GT2.
You know,
people are like, it's squirrely, it's scary and everything. And it's like, well, that's what's great about it. You got to fucking learn how to do it. It's not automatic. People want everything just to be like, I want ABS and I want traction control and all that, you know. You get in that GT2 and go, it could take you out.
Yeah, I had a GT3 for a while. That was all set up for the track.
Yeah.
And that was a great car. And I had ordered another one, a newer one, but same time, right after I ordered it, several months afterwards, this big tour and all the shit just went away. And I kind of was budgeting this purchase based on what I was going to make. And I had to... I had to get rid of it, but I had a lot of old cars. I've had a lot. This is my ninth Corvette. I had a 62, I had a 65, I had a 66, I had two 67s, and then I had a couple Z06s later, you know, 2000s. But you know, just always been a big Corvette guy and the styling and stuff.
That's great.
I'm not, you know, strictly a Porsche guy or this or that. I like that car, I like that car, I like that car. They all have these great qualities.
I love them all, but 911 is watches.
I mean,
it's great.
My biggest probably weakness is the Rolexes, like John Marius. And I have four Rolexes.
Yeah? Any vintage or just all newer?
Well, I have a Daytona that's the 94, I think.
Oh, like Zenith Movement.
If I wear that, if I'm going to a jewelry store or anything, they go, like, you want to sell that?
Yeah.
And I have a GMT, and then I have a what do you call it? I can't think of it. But anyways, you know, I love the Rolexes.
I love them. Classic. That was funny last night. Steven goes, is that a Rolex? Did Joe? Joe was wearing a Panerai last night. I always look at the watches. And he just ripped on him. Is that a Rolex? I was cracking up, man.
You don't know much about watches, do you?
Yeah, Steven's got the Rainbow Daytona. He wears the crazy one. Like, or the Cheetah one. He wears the Cheetah one.
And Tom's way into watches.
Oh, really?
Yeah, way.
Oh, wow. Well, I can't thank you enough for doing the show. It means much to me, man.
Thank you so much.
I mean, I wanted to talk to you for a couple of years now. Well, yeah, I want to talk to you forever, but I was like, wow, you know, I mean, look, you could talk to Steven and or Joe. Everybody's done that. But to really talk to you as I just love a guy who's the real people out there know. They're like, Brad, you know, that's the thing in the musician world, like, Brad. And if you were in any other band, just one guitar player, it would be looked at as like, oh, my God, they got Brad Whitford. You know what I mean? Like, the God. It's
Well, that's nice to hear.
Yeah. Right. And it's a great thing. You can kind of cruise around, right?
Yeah, I can because, I mean, and I can say this honestly, that if I'm not on stage with that band Aerosmith, it don't sound so good.
Oh. Oh my God.
And with that?
Yeah.
I'm just being honest.
Yeah. I love it. Have a great tour in Europe. Rival Sons, some of my best friends. Absolutely love those humans.
I love that band. They're some of the nicest people.
They're incredible.
On the planet.
And looking forward to seeing you a couple more times on this residency out in Las Vegas. And it was fantastic last night. I had a great time. And I tell you what, everybody, go see this. It's at the Park. They got two more shows this week. And then they come back in May.
Yeah.
And then Europe tour.
Yeah.
And you enjoy just sitting in one spot doing residency? It's a lot easier, right?
Yeah, I do like it. Yeah.
This is kind
of
cool.
Take the travel out of it is really nice.
You could just do this the rest of your life. It'd be great, right? Like 4 months a year or something?
That'd be fine with me.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
Thanks.
I love you, man.
Thank you. I love you too. Thank you.
There you guys go, right there. Another episode of Let There Be Talk. Do not forget to subscribe to the YouTube channel or the Patreon page or the iTunes channel. Thank you for tuning in, and go listen to some Aerosmith today or Whitford St. Holmes, whatever you want to do. Get out there and listen to some music.